Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. My name is Rachel and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Rachel.
Hi Rachel.
We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey in recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off, we have Anna. Anna, would you like to share?
Thanks, Rachel. Hi, I'm Anna and I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hi, Anna.
I'm 58 years old and I'm a married mother of three children, three stepchildren and one daughter. And I'm very grateful to be in recovery. My drinking career lasted all of 5 years. Once I started to drink, pretty regularly, that's how much alcohol didn't agree with me. I can remember, because I've been in recovery a while, I can remember the anxiety and depression that went with alcoholism. I would just be suffering so much with my drinking. I just couldn't stop. And I spent quite a few months trying different ways. And I'd ring up my friends when I was drunk and invite them for lunch. And then when they turned up, I couldn't remember even inviting them. And it was just an absolute nightmare. What had gone from having fun was anything but, and I would go into blackout and couldn't remember what I'd done. I couldn't remember where my car was. It was just a really awful place to be. And I was lucky in that my family contacted the psychiatrist I had been seeing who was treating me for depression. And she told me that I was going to lose everything that was important to me. So I took it pretty seriously. But when I went down to Hemner, Queen Mary Hospital, I was with people that were private as well as some from the criminal justice system. And I can remember just being appalled, thinking, oh, my God, you know, I didn't have tattoos and I didn't have missing teeth, and these criminals would come up to me and ask me what my poison was, and I was just so shocked. But looking back now, they're just nice people that also have an addiction. And but the thing is, I said to my counsellor when I was there, I said, look, I'm not an alcoholic. And he gave me this book to read about addictive thinking, and so I took it back to my room and I read it, and it made me realise that all the thinking was the same, the addictive thinking about being obsessed with alcohol, trying to stop and not being able to, the way it was affecting my relationships and my my work and my health, and I still carried on. So I never actually drank again. That was 20 years ago, but I continued to smoke dope, and I went through a custody case with my daughter's father, and it was pretty overwhelming and toxic. And I found my emotions were, it was a very hard emotionally to go through the family court, and my feelings would be overwhelming at times. And I took every drug under the sun, just as long as I wasn't drinking. In fact, I used to think I was very successful at AA, which is just insanity. But 7 years later, it caught up with me again. I tried to stop taking party pills that were available on the market through dairies and things, and that I'd been given, and became immediately addicted to because they're like speed. And I went to CAS to try and stop, but I couldn't. And in the end, I told my employer that I had a problem, and I was sent to rehab, and I took it pretty seriously this time. But one of the things I remember was that it was very, very difficult not to have anything. And I felt very lonely. I have a twin sister who is not an alcoholic or an addict. She has a stop button, but I had to park her away. And she's still parked away because I'm not sure what the dynamics are behind it, but she wanted me to get her a bag of dope as soon as I arrived back on a plane from America for drug addiction. And so she didn't really want to see me recover for some reason, and I've parked her. And that there's a message there that even if they're your family and they don't support your recovery, you just cannot be around them. And so that was pretty hard. But anyway, since I've been in recovery, the first couple of years were pretty hard. I relapsed over and over again the first year, but I kept trying and kept going to meetings, and I had a sponsor. And the world seemed very black and white rather than full of colour. But I persevered because I knew I didn't want to have a... I could have a choice to have a good life or to have a life suffering, and I chose to have a good life. And everything I've got now, which is a very simple life, but I'm always happy, and if something comes out of left field, I'm content, I'm emotionally stable, I have really good relationships with people. I'm presently studying to be a addiction therapist, and I find it the fact that I have the experience myself is really helpful when trying to help those that are still suffering or in early recovery. And what I've noticed is that I'm so practiced at being grateful that I've got a very happy demeanour, and I owe everything to my higher power and the people that support me in my recovery. And if I didn't have that, I don't know where I'd be. I couldn't imagine my life being good at all. When I first walked into my AA meeting for the first time, I remember it was like backing away from hell. And it's hard for me to remember clearly what it was like, but I found a whole lot of workbooks and things that I had filled out when I was in rehab the first time, and I remember closing it because I didn't want to be reminded of how awful addiction is at the coalface. So if I have any advice to give somebody, yes, it's not easy in the beginning, but you don't do it on your own. We're all here to support you. There are so many people who are able to be helpful to others, and they do it willingly with no strings attached, and they all know what it's like to be suffering, and they genuinely, from the bottom of their heart, want to help those that are still in the midst of addiction. And so there's a lot of help, and my life is just a joy. I feel like my life is, I'm really living a life that I was supposed to live and reaching my potential. So thank you very much, Rachel, for asking me to share.
Thanks, Anna. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the next person to share is Dave.
Thanks, Rachel. Hi, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
I'll just give you a rundown of who I am and what I represent. I'm 54 years old. I was born in a small town in the Waikato, and As a boy, I had a very happy upbringing with my parents. I was in a very lovely family, and I don't remember really ever being surrounded by alcohol. My parents were very light drinkers, and we didn't really have alcohol in the house, apart from in very small quantities. My parents drank very little, and as far as I'm aware, I have no relatives or genetic predisposition to alcoholism, so it didn't really feature much in my early childhood. You know, I was very unaware, really, of the effects of alcohol. As I got older, obviously, my teenage years became aware that people drank, and in those days, the standard procedure was to sneak in to go into the wholesale or get an older person to go into the wholesale for you to get a flagon or a dozen DB, and then you'd put it in the boot of the car, go off and drink it. I found I could sort of take or leave alcohol, surprisingly, when I was a teenager. I quite liked the effects of it, but I don't even remember ever thinking, oh, this is great, and I don't really think I was predisposed to having a, you know, to being an alcoholic in the sense, if you can think of it like that. As I got older, though, I realised alcohol was a social lubricant, and as I went into my first career, I found that a lot of the people in my chosen career drank, and I found it also gave me a lot of courage and also loosened my tongue a bit. I found I could talk quite easily to people, and of course, I think they call it Dutch courage. You could help when talking to the opposite sex, and also, you know, just greasing the wheels, I guess, of when you're socialising with people. I just carried on drinking. I guess I would have described myself as a heavy social drinker, but I could, as I said, I could take or leave alcohol. Where I think I started running into trouble was I got into a bad relationship, and I started drinking more and more, and I started to experience increasing levels of anxiety, and I found alcohol was very useful in helping me deal with my feelings of anxiety. But I found myself alone at nights. I was isolating. I had started to, I think my friends had noticed that I was not the person that I was. I had started suffering from depression, and I found that alcohol helped me a lot with that. It helped me to sort of quell the feelings of anxiety, I guess. But I found very rapidly that as I fell deeper into depression, I drank more, and I think it set up a vicious spiral to the point where I woke up one morning and I was unable to not drink, which obviously frightened me a lot as I realised that I was an alcoholic, but I didn't really know what to do about it, so I just sort of stumbled and bumbled on. Luckily, the employer I was working for was very forward-thinking, and I had a lot of very helpful, loving, caring friends. So I got suggested I would go off to rehab. I don't think I would have been in any state really to walk into AA. I found AA through the rehab I was at. Initially, when I first walked into AA, I found it very confusing. There were people there I couldn't really relate to. I didn't think I really fitted in there, but I very quickly realised that we were all afflicted with the same issue, alcoholism, and I've obviously came to really enjoy, and AA is obviously a huge part of my recovery. I don't think I would be sitting here today and being successful thus far if I hadn't embraced the concept of AA. Luckily for me, I'd always believed in a higher power, and I saw a lot of people railing against that concept. For me, I would never found that an issue. In fact, I embraced that side of the program, and I have a strong, you know, belief in the spiritual side of the program. I was very lucky in terms of the fact that I had a long period in rehabilitation. I came out and I was supported very well by both my friends and my employer, and it enabled me to recover to the point where I could resume my career. And I've been, as I said, in sobriety thus far for almost 12 years. I've tried to help other people along the way as much as I can, both in a, I guess, from a friendship level and from a professional level, helping people get their careers back on track and their lives back on track. And I know my life today I'm, you know, I would say I have a wonderful life. It's not perfect, and there are obviously areas that I continue to work on, like all of us. But I think, as Anna said before, it's enabled me to reach my potential. I don't think I well, I don't think I'd be here if I was if I'd carried on drinking, and doing drugs to a limited extent. It just doesn't really form part of who I am. I think I got sidetracked, and obviously fell into addiction. But I'm totally convinced, and I've got no doubt in my mind that the path that I've walked down in recovery has been the right one for me. I've seen a lot of other people, which is a salutary reminder to me of how easy it is to fall off the, or you know, stray off the road, so to speak. I've seen people come into the program and they've suddenly realised that they're not at meetings, they've disappeared, and you realise that you have to take this journey in recovery very seriously. It's the most important thing you can do, is your sobriety has to come first. I've seen people I have to watch this in myself, that I don't always keep my sobriety as my number one priority in my life. It's easy to get distracted with your career and life events, and your sobriety starts almost, you know, going to into second place in your life. But I think it's very dangerous to think along that way. But I'm very grateful that I've been shown this path, and I've been given a gift. And I think the seeds to me were sown when I first walked into rehab and I wondered how I was going to stop drinking. And all I can say is the desire to stop drinking left me quite quickly. I've been very lucky. I sort of knew that it was the right path to go down. But it's keeping your sobriety to me, which is the key. Anyone can stop drinking, but you have to be able to keep not drinking. And I think it's crucial that you have to go to AA, because that's it's like an insurance policy, I guess, or God's given us an insurance policy. Say, if you follow these rules and you do this, you'll be fine. And I think you don't do that at your peril. And so I'll just always keep coming back, as they say, and I'll try and keep the AA in my life as long as I'm walking on the earth. So thank you very much for listening to me, and God bless you all.
Thanks, Dave. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the last person we have to share is Sonia.
Hi, I'm Sonia. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sonia.
Hi, Sonia.
I'm relatively new to recovery compared to Dave and Anna. I've been sober for almost 2.5 years now. Hasn't been easy, but boy, has my life changed for the better. What brought me into recovery was, I was a daily drinker. I drank to blackout every single day, to the point where I was isolating as well. And I also, I suppose for the last year or two, was a morning drinker. I told myself that was to take away the shakes, but it was actually to give myself courage just to face the day. What brought me into recovery actually was not admitting to myself that I was alcoholic, but my husband saying that he couldn't live with someone and watch them kill themselves, and that I just wasn't present, and he couldn't be married to someone who just wasn't there. We separated and had a couple of sessions of counselling, and I knew I had a problem, and I asked him if there was any chance we would get back together, and he said, well, no, there's no chance of getting back together because there's been no change in my behaviour. And that actually is when I realised actually this problem is more than just a problem. So I went to CADS, did an assessment, and I was having such panic attacks I couldn't even fill in the forms. My husband had to do that, and I couldn't sign my name. But I came out of that session, and CADS were great, but I actually, in my mind, I thought I could be a controlled drinker. Went into a treatment centre. And it wasn't actually until that first day that I realised, actually, I'm like everyone else here, and they're alcoholics, and I am too. yeah, I feel really embarrassed, actually, that I was so naive to not think that the problem was bigger than it actually was. That actually brought some sort of sense of relief, actually, sort of, although I didn't like the term necessarily alcoholic, and I accept that now I'm alcoholic, you know, and I don't ask why, I just am. But, yeah, it was quite confronting, you know, that my whole life as I knew it was going to change, that I could no longer drink. And it was going to kill me. I was pretty fortunate that I hadn't lost my job, hadn't lost my license, but those were all the yets that you hear in AA. It was going to happen. So, I had avoided AA. I'd looked up the website a few times, usually when I was drunk, but and only for a nanosecond, as soon as I saw the God thing, I was like, no, that's not for me. And even before going into treatment, you know, I could see that there were a lot of treatment centres that were 12-step based. And I was like, oh, that really isn't me. And even my husband said, oh, yeah, that's not for you. So I rang some psychologists and asked where you could go that wasn't, you know, based on 12 steps. And one of them just laughed at me and he said, oh, is it the God thing? And I said, yeah, yeah. And he said, give it a go, go to treatment, you know. And so I thought, okay, I'll be open, willing. I've got no other choice, actually. Once it all came out in the open and also with my employer, who I was honest with, I had to do something about it. So, and then treatment, and they said, get your shoes on, we're leaving in 10 minutes. I was like, where to? And they said, an AA meeting. I was like, oh, you're kidding me. But, I went there, and it wasn't what I expected. I looked around the room, and I thought, how can all of these people be alcoholics, and how can they look so normal and look so happy? I gave it a go. I got a sponsor. We were encouraged to get a sponsor early on, and that has been the best thing ever in going through the steps, because I really think if I hadn't gone to treatment, hadn't been forced to go to AA, I would never have walked through the doors. And it's the treatment centre got me sober, but it's AA that has kept me sober, and that working the program, or trying to work the program as best as I possibly can on a daily basis, is what keeps me sober as well. Meetings, hearing stories of others, whether they're newcomers, to remind me of what my life used to be like, or those who have a long history in recovery to tell me that, yes, you can actually live a life without alcohol successfully, but you need to keep coming back. It's also hearing people relapse, and I'm fortunate enough that I haven't picked up a drink since I last put one down. But that's not to say that, you know, I'm safe forever. I could easily pick up one tomorrow. Something could go wrong. I could pick one up. And I know that once I've picked up that first drink, I can't stop. And I've proven that over and over again, that I have no off button. And relapsing scares me. And I think it's quite a healthy fear, actually, because it stops me from picking up that first one. And even if I have that thought of, oh, it'd be really nice to have a, you know, glass of beer now, or I'd really like to drink normally, and I don't beat myself up when I have that first thought, because it's the second thought which is important, and that second thought is, I can't, you know, I'm alcoholic, I can't drink. And it's just like other people that have a peanut allergy. They can't eat peanuts, otherwise, you know, they'll go into an anaphylactic shock. I can't drink, and I accept that now. And it was actually quite hard when I first got out of the treatment centre, sort of going back to my normal life, going back to work, interacting with other people who were different from me. And I felt different, and I felt very vulnerable. I felt people were watching me. I felt, that's my ego though, because it's all about me. Yeah, I actually didn't know how to function without alcohol. And Dave mentioned about being a social lubricant, and alcohol, when I was out socially, did give me that confidence to interact with people where, you know, I would have felt uncomfortable, you know, perhaps some anxiety as well. And that's why I used to drink before even going out, you know, sort of that preloading, and then, you know, having some drinks. And I could always go out and I know you have a couple of drinks, but I always knew that I would go home and have a few bottles more. So, yeah, when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking, and it ruled my life. And I was living a lie, actually. I spent my whole life trying to pretend I was something I was not. And it all comes down to, you know, those fears that I have that I'm not as good as other people, that people are watching me, that, you know. And so I'd get on the attack sometimes, you know, and or on the defensive, and I'd be reactive, I'd get angry, and, you know, and it was all down because I was actually sort of like a scared little girl. And people talk about being in AA and recovery and growing up. I'm actually starting to feel my age. I'm 47 years old, and I'm not a scared little girl anymore. But I still have fears, but I'm well aware of them, and I still tend to overthink. I know that's a common trait. I get stuck in my head. But, yeah, it doesn't rule my life. I can stop, pause, and reset things, and that serenity prayer, that's great. It's you know, I use it many times a day, in fact. But yeah, from having, you know, not knowing how to function, you know, without alcohol, you know, it soon actually became normal not drinking. Initially, I didn't know what to do in the evenings. I really didn't. And watching TV, I just get irritable. And I found sometimes it was better to just go to bed and try and go to sleep at 7:30 at night, because it was easier than being awake and sober and just angry still. I was angry for a long time. I didn't realise how angry I was all the time until I, you know, was less angry. But, yeah, and eventually became not normal, going home, finding other things to do. I didn't really have any hobbies. Sitting on the couch drinking wine was what I did all the time when I wasn't at work. But, yeah, and even, you know, went to the next phase, which was, you know, yeah, it's normal not drinking, but actually I prefer not drinking now, and you get a lot more done, you're a lot more productive. And I'm a lot more useful to other people as well. And that's not just in recovery doing service, it's actually to family members, it's to, you know, colleagues. I'm present now when I have conversations with people, and I mentioned about inviting people over for lunch, you know, and not remembering. I used to do that all the time, or invite people over for dinner and, you know, get so drunk I wouldn't actually cook dinner and have to rely on my husband to try and work out what was on the menu. But I'm actually, when I think about it, there's a lot of embarrassing times from the past, but, you know, that is the past. I can't promise that I will never drink again, because I don't know if I can keep that promise. But what I can do is get up in the morning, read my daily read my daily reflection, and pray, hand my will over, and, you know, and do my very best not to drink that day. And then I'll go to sleep feeling very grateful, and I'll get up and I'll do the same thing tomorrow. So that's my story. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Sonia. Thanks. That brings us towards the end of our meeting. If you've been listening and identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box under meetings list, there's a list of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the country. You can also phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.